I think the main advice would be to try to get as close of it as possible, like try to actually go do internships and understand, go, do an internship in a feedlot or in a packing plant or in a cow-calf. Try to see as much as you can. If this student happens to be somebody that, like, okay, I grew up in a ranch, I'm seeing it all, maybe try to go the other route then. Try to join a lab that's doing ruminal microbiology and try to learn the other end of the spectrum. So I think the larger your spectrum within that career, the more versatile of a professional they can be.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit ProEarthAnimalHealth.com today. Lallemand Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm your host, Brandy Buzzard, and it's my pleasure to bring you the latest trends and issues from the best and brightest minds in the beef industry. Today, we are joined by Dr. Elise Brando. She earned her master's degree as well as her DVM from Sao Paulo State University. She earned her PhD in animal science from Texas A&M University and is now an instructional assistant professor there. Her line of work and research focuses on teaching and learning for higher education and extension. Her overall goal is to make research-based concepts more accessible to people working in agriculture and to improve educational experiences of college students in ag-related disciplines. I'm really looking forward to speaking with her today about all things about academia and teaching. And so without further ado, I welcome to the podcast, Dr. Elise Brando. How are you today, doctor?
I'm really well. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So yeah, excited to have this conversation with you.
Well, thank you again for giving us a little bit of your time and just to talk about your experiences in your career so far. I know that I touched a little bit on your career, but I know that you've been working in the beef industry and you grew up with cattle. You have this long educational career. And so I just talked about a small amount of it. So if you could just bring us up to speed on your background and how you got started in the beef industry and then your career so far, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I kind of grew up around cattle. Not all the time. My grandfather had a ranch and he didn't live on the ranch. We lived in a small town in the countryside of Sao Paulo State. So when I say I'm from Sao Paulo, sometimes people imagine like the huge metropolitan area, and that's not at all what I grew up with. And so every summer we would go spend vacations at that ranch, and it's some of, my happiest childhood memories, being there with, cousins and aunts and uncles and all that good stuff. So it wasn't like I was doing much with the cattle at that time. It was just something that I grew fond of. And, the years passed, life goes on. And when it came time for me to go to college, decide what I wanted to do after, finishing up high school and all that. That kind of like love for animals and that kind of like that bug was still in my ear, and I decided to go get my DVM, which in Brazil is more like a bachelor's degree. So I went ahead and started that at São Paulo State University, and at that point I wasn't really decided in cattle or in anything in particular. I always liked all kinds of animals, and the friends I made right there in my freshman year, they were all from the city, and they all wanted to work with small animals. So that was kind of like the first route I took during college. And then quickly I realized that wasn't for me. I didn't like spending my days inside of the hospital. The relationships with the owners sometimes were really rewarding and sometimes were really frustrating. you know, the way some people take care of their pets or don't take care of their pets, it can be difficult to deal with. So at that point, I think I was maybe end of my sophomore, start of my junior year, I started thinking about something different to do. And I found this huge study group that we have in São Paulo State University that is related to beef and dairy cattle. So I joined them at that point and did a few internships with dairy cows, and then some with beef, and I completely fell in love with both. I thought it was just amazing spending days outside, you know, working with the animals, and it's like, okay, now I found what I really love to do. And it wasn't very difficult to decide to do a master's. And at that point, I liked both, but I felt dairy was just more interesting. There were more activities going on. You interacted with the animals more. So I decided to go with dairy, did my master's with dairy. And towards the end of my master's, there was this opportunity to come work in the US. Still in my master's, and I spent some time at Oregon State University in Burns, Oregon. I don't know if you're familiar with Oregon geographical.
I know where Oregon is. I've never been there, but I know where it is. I've been very close. I've been to Washington, but never to Oregon.
Okay.
I see the Oregon poster on your wall behind you. It looks really nice.
Yeah, it was my husband's, and I said, you know what, I have history with Oregon too, so I'll take that to my office because I like it. It was just sitting there catching dust, and I was like, I'm gonna put it up in my office. So anyway, Burns, if you kind of like just go all the way east almost to Idaho, so it's really the middle of nowhere. I remember when I arrived thinking, like, we drove for 2 hours from, I landed in Boise, Idaho, and we went west to Burns, and I was scared because I was like, I don't think I ever drove for so long without seeing anything, just nature, just like mountains, and I think you can kind of call that a high desert, like say a lot of sagebrush, a lot of juniper, and it was just like, wow, where am I going?
Yeah.
But I spent a couple years there, and actually I spent first only 6 months with Dr. Cook's lab, Dr. Reynaldo Cook, who was involved with that, with my master's. He was technically my committee chair, but who was actually, like, in practice, my committee chair was a professor from Brazil. Dr. Vasconcelos was actually the more active mentor. But then spending that time in Oregon, I really actually enjoyed it. I saw a lot of opportunities working in the U.S. Like, we could very much quicker and easier publish our data and analyze, and the resources that Dr. Cook had in his lab, that all kind of like fascinated me. But it's still, I came back, I defended my master's, but then I had again another bug in my ear of like, oh, what if I went back? What if, you know, this could be an opportunity? So I did. I talked to Dr. Cook in one of his visits, and he said, okay, we can, you would be good candidate for a PhD student. So I went back to Oregon. Then I spent a couple of years there, and then everything was going well. I had friends there. I mean, it was still very isolated, but I mean, it was probably one of the times of my life that I felt the biggest connection with the beef industry, because we were there. I was like working cattle almost every day. I mean, I knew the cows. We would win the calves, and we knew them. They went from one trial to another, and we knew them by their tags. Some of them even had names and stuff. And
yeah,
we would keep up with, like, okay, if something needs diesel or fixing, we would let somebody know. So I felt very much a part of that, you know, beef cattle ecosystem.
Yeah, like a piece of the puzzle.
A piece of the puzzle, exactly. And I was supposed to go to the campus, which is in Corvallis, Oregon State campus, to take classes. It's 5 hours away, Burns to Corvallis. So the way that program works is like you stay a bit in that research center, and then you stay a bit in campus to take your classes and all that. And when that time came for me to leave Burns and go to Corvallis, what actually happened was that Dr. Cook was hired by Texas A&M as a faculty.
Oh, okay.
He got an offer and he took it, and he came to me and the other students at the time and said, I am taking this offer. I have a position for whoever wants to come with me, because I'm going to rebuild my lab there and just, you know, continue to do a research there. So if you want to come, you can come. We can transfer. If you want to stay here, if you know you were adapted, whatever you want to do, you can stay. And then at that point, it just seems like logical to me, because I was like, wow, I feel like I've seen a lot. I learned a lot. And you can always learn more. I don't think you ever cap a potential in one single place. But going all the way to Texas seemed like a smart move at the time.
Those are very far apart.
very far apart. But it seemed like the place to be working with beef cattle. I was like, I feel like I should take this opportunity. And at that point, I'll be honest with you, I had no idea like how big Texas A&M was as a campus, as a university. I was very ignorant. I remember arriving the first, I came right after that because I had to work on my visa and everything. So it's like, okay, I'm moving down. You guys are going to wrap up all the projects in another 6 months. You're going to move to College Station. So I came before actually moving, and I was like, wow, this is very big, because I went from a small research station where I knew everybody, where I like working cattle every day, to this huge campus where, you know, you need a map just to know which building to go to.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a huge change. And then after that, you know, College Station, it's been fun, made a lot of friends. Again, it's a much bigger department. Mm-hmm. A lot of other students from Brazil, some students from São Paulo State that I actually knew from back there. They just happened to cross paths.
Oh.
So it was a very fun PhD program. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I felt like I was still a piece of the puzzle, but just because you're in the city, everything is a bit different. So we felt like, you know, the beef cattle interactions were done in the farms and stuff. And then you come back and you are in this, I mean, for me, College Station is a big city. I grew up in a very small town.
I agree. It's a big city. Yes, I agree
okay.
with that.
Good. Because some people from Houston think like, oh, there's nothing to do here. There's nothing here. And I'm like, oh, I think it's pretty big.
Yeah, it has 100. I just Googled it. It has 126,000 people. That's a big city.
I know. Okay. Thank you. I agree. Yes. Some people don't. I agree. I think it's a big city. So it's just like that kind of like, and I mean, here in Texas, everything's about beef. There's a lot of support. It's everywhere. People talk about it. And it's even the culture, it's very strong. Like the cowboy culture, Western culture is very strong here. But it still is just kind of like more moving parts. So that connection with the beef industry, it was still very strong. But I started to realize that like I probably not going to be working on a farm once I finish this PhD. That's not going to play out that way, most likely.
Yeah.
And coincidentally, about that time, I was also helping with a side project of my advisor. There was this online course for international students. And I was enjoying doing it. And it was a side project. I was, you know, while doing research in my classes, there was that. But what happened was that after a couple of years of me working with that project, COVID hit.
Mm.
And we had to do an online transition. And all of a sudden, because I was helping with that course for a couple of years, in the whole department, I was one of the people who had decent, I won't say best, because a lot of our faculty were very skilled, but there was a huge gap in skill set regarding getting a whole course and putting it now online. Some people did it.
Yeah.
Won their sleep. No worries. They knew what to do. And some other professors who maybe taught for decades and were, you know, very comfortable with like handouts and Blackboard and whatever, they were like, what am I supposed to do?
Right. Yeah.
So I started helping some people in our department with that. And a lot of the help, I mean, I'm not the most tech-savvy person out there by far, but a lot of it was just reassuring, saying, this is possible, it's going to be okay, we got this. So with that involvement, I started gaining a taste for teaching and seeing this other side of things and interacting with some undergrads a little bit more closely, because up at that point, my PhD, it was only like research, thinking about the animals, lab work. It was just very in that bubble. I had that online course that was, it touched a little bit with teaching and extension, but I hadn't really seen any of those other sides. And then when I kind of like delved on that, it felt really good. I really enjoyed teaching. I really enjoyed trying to figure out creative ways to make concepts easier for people to understand, creative ways to do things that we always did a certain way. So there was a feeds class that they would go and tour a feed mill. And coincidentally, at that point, I was already dating my husband at the time, and he worked at that feed mill. So I did like a video tour for the students, and because we couldn't go there because it was COVID. So I really enjoyed that part of things. And then once I graduated, started wrapping things up, this opportunity showed up of like staying here, but it was as an instructional assistant professor, which meant that I would probably not be working with cattle anymore. It would be, you know, now you move to this teaching sphere. And it was a hard decision at the time, because I really loved the animal part and the research part. I felt like I was losing a piece of maybe my identity. But I think I did the right choice. Like, I feel like I have, this is the best use of my skill set, and I still get to interact with colleagues. They're doing research and, you know, go to some conferences and keep up with everything. And when you talk to students, that kind of comes really handy to having that background and understanding the ins and outs of, you know, I've been part of a lab, even though I don't lead one per se. I've been there and I can maybe help them navigate their own kind of like life choices and all that. So yeah, I feel like I talked a lot, but basically that's kind of like where I am with my career, pretty much.
Well, you've had a long career, so this takes a while to go through it. You had a lot of really diverse experiences. You in Sao Paulo, and then you were at Oregon State, and now you're at Texas A&M. That's a lot. I do want to say, the people who are making fun of you saying that Houston is bigger, Houston is the fourth largest city in the entire United States. So that's not a very fair comparison of city size. Like, that's an unusually large city to compare College Station to, but you know, that's neither here nor there. But you have had a lot of diverse experiences in your career. And I know that you did like different research in all those places. I think that you did some fetal programming and some BRD on receiving calves, and then some nutritional reproduction work. Like, of those things, which of your, we're going to get to your teaching more in a little bit, but I don't want to just rush through your research. Which of those research experiences was your favorite?
Well, it's very easy to say now that has passed, and it's just like fond memories, because, you know, the memories, I only have good memories now, but I remember having a lot of difficulties going through the trials and everything. But I think the fetal programming research is really interesting. Like, the idea of being able to, you know, for the way we did it in Dr. Cook's lab, it was that we started working with the cows from the AI. So we would AI, like, okay, a group of cows, and then from those, whoever gets pregnant from the same bull, they're going to be in the trial, and so they move forward. So it's very, you become very close to those animals, you become very close to the people you work with, and I think you just learn a lot about the subject matter, which is like fetal programming, and you know, how feeding something through gestation, through certain stages of gestation, will affect that offspring. But you also learn a lot about the industry and just, you know, how the animals behave. And so I think that was definitely my favorite, because there was just, it was very rich. It was very rich in terms of like everything you get to experience going through that type of trial.
So do you get to use any of that fetal programming in your teaching? Like what subjects and courses do you teach now at Texas A&M?
So right now I teach a course that's actually for non-major students. So it's a large enrollment animal science intro. So it's called General Animal Science. So it's a core curriculum for students of other majors.
Okay.
And it's a large course. So this spring I have 680 students enrolled.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it's large. So for example, I actually do use it. Their genetic part, you know, they have a little unit that's about genetics and how that works for livestock animals and whatnot. So I do talk about epigenetics and how there are factors that influence the way genes are expressed and how, mm-hmm. I mean, of course, that's in a much simpler level than it would be in a PhD research, but it really helps, I think, grasping those complex concepts really helps when you're to explain in a simple way, which is kind of funny because I feel like when you really understand something and you've been through it in from different angles, that's when you can actually explain it effectively in a simple way. So that I think that really helps. And the other course that I currently teach is Capstone for the animal science major. So that's the almost like the complete opposite. So it's only animal science majors. They all seniors and they're all about to graduate. It's their last course, and they have to put together a project about, you know, a topic in animal science. So that really helps when they want to do something that involves those concepts. So I have literature to refer them to, and I can help them understand how certain things work. So it's, yeah, I think it definitely helps because, like I said, you learn a lot about the subject matter, but it's a very, those trials are rich because you're feeding the cows and then you're seeing them calve and then you're seeing to the calves until they go to slaughter. So you get to see like the whole story. You kind of see the whole story.
You said, I just have to backtrack a bit. You said 600 students. Is that like an online course? You have 600 students in a classroom.
That one is online.
Okay.
So that's
goodness.
A class. Yeah. Yeah. But the other one, actually, there's one that I am slowly starting to teach. So I'm actually this semester I'm teaching with another professor. He's about to retire, so I don't know, maybe I'll take over. I'm not sure what the plans are from admin on that, but that one is a animal science freshman course, and that one it's 450 students in the classroom. That one is in person. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
a lot of people. It's a lot of people.
You mentioned that you've said it more than once now that you want to improve experience for students in these ag-related disciplines. So not necessarily all animal science students, but just the overall experience for kids in agriculture. Can you like explain that a bit more? You know, how did you arrive at that maybe? Or what is some of that, those efforts look like?
Those efforts are kind of like collaborative. So I say ag-related just because then there are some other professors from other departments that we work on projects with kind of like different approach to teaching. So we have worked a little bit with design thinking and you know, all this. We try to use technology to kind of help them understand some concepts and also to I don't want to say like fill a gap, but the students that are coming to study animal science and a lot of other ag-related disciplines, not all of them have a strong agricultural background like it used to be. So it's just trying to provide in the classroom and in our teaching as much as we can in terms of preparing them to be professionals that will stay in agriculture, they'll be part of that workforce. So that looks different depending on each course. But for example, for our Capstone course, they have to, that's a course we work with design thinking, that's basically a step-by-step approach to problem solving. in a nutshell. So just trying to get them to get familiar with, like, pick one problem within animal agriculture and slowly throughout the semester try to pose a solution to that problem, try to build a solution to that problem. So trying to connect what they have seen in those 4 years of theory and classes and everything back to what is happening out there in the ag world. And a lot of students already made the connection and they wouldn't per se need that.
Right.
But some might not. And it's interesting talking to some colleagues that have been in the department for longer than I have. And they tend to say that, well, we used to get a lot of ranch kids and farm kids. And if we look at the population of our student cohort right now, a lot of them are from Houston, Dallas, or even out of state, bigger cities. So some of the concepts that we just assume are common sense, sometimes they're not. Like, I had once a student ask me what silage was, and for me that was like shocking, that like how somebody doesn't know that. But I was like, well, maybe if my grandpa didn't have a ranch and,
yeah,
you know, I would have never seen a silage before I went to my nutrition class in college. So that makes sense. So it's just trying to cater to that population of students that it's like, okay, maybe they didn't have that background, but it would be nice if they consider agriculture as their future career if they are here in the animal science department or if they're in any ag related major.
That's interesting you said silage like that, because that you mentioned it, because I grew up in agriculture, but we didn't have a ranch or anything like that. We had, you know, we had some cattle for 4-H and things, but not a big ranch. And I didn't know what silage was either when I got to, I mean, I knew what the word was, like I had heard it, but I didn't actually know what it was or how it was made. So, you know, efforts like yours and that really does make a difference in students' lives.
Yeah, no, I hope so. And the animal science department here at Texas A&M is very committed to that, because we are a large department and the students are a huge part of it. Like, I think that, you know, I think it's hard to think of them are like our clients or consumers or either our products. I think they're a bit of both. Like, they're part of what we are seen as. Like, it's part of what carries the identity of an institution. It's like all these graduates and what they're doing out there, and a lot of them are doing great things, and it's not like this is like a problem to solve, but it's a tendency that we see that it's, well, we have to be mindful of the background of those students and make sure that they have the best tools to succeed. I think that's making sure that the ones that don't have the background understand that agriculture, animal agriculture especially, can be for you. It's not just because you did not grow up in a ranch or, you know, you never being around cows growing up that you cannot think of a career as a ruminant nutritionist. You cannot think of a career as a large animal vet or whatever it might be. So I think just kind of making the message very clear that you can learn these things and you belong here no matter where you come from. I think that's very important.
That is very important, that agriculture is, you know, has a lot of diverse people in it and diverse backgrounds. And the people that didn't grow up in agriculture absolutely want to get into it. And it's just really important that people feel welcome and that they can, you know, achieve the same career or goals that someone that grew up on a ranch could. I think that's really, it's really important work.
Thank you. Yeah, I think so too. That's why I'm doing.
Yeah, of course you think it's important. I understand. Yeah. I want to talk more about your goal. It was in your bio, but like your goal, it's similar, right, to the kids or the students, but making research-based concepts more accessible to people working in ag. So is that, you know, you're taking these research outcomes and making them where they're more bite-sized or consumable to people who are in ag but maybe don't have that research background?
Yeah, so that actually was a big part of my mission when I was working with that international course. you know, that I mentioned. So that was something that I was very passionate about. And I'm still very passionate. It's just, I think my responsibilities changed a little bit. It's something that I still have in the back of my mind and something that I like to do, but it's now it's in a more informal type of basis. Like there is a, for example, there is an AI clinic that runs here in town from like a private place, and they teach people how to AI, and then they run a course every month of different cohorts. So, you know, one of the works I do is like I teach for them one class on effects of stress in cow reproduction. So trying to make those ideas of like how stress actually does have an impact on your cow's pregnancy rates, and then making that understandable for people who are sitting there and that I know very little about. So there might be people there who have only their high school diploma and now they just want to go and, you know, AI their cows. So just trying to explain that's why you should be mindful of the way you handle your cows. So that kind of thing I'm very passionate about. I do not have as much opportunity to engage with it as when I was working with that course, because that online course is the Beef Cattle Academy is part of an extension initiative. So it was much more producer based. So we would sometimes talk about the problems they have in their ranches and try to kind of like find research and concepts that would help them understand and help even with resources, like from here, this is your problem. What resources should you go seek to get the answers you need? So that was very active. I'm still very passionate about it, but I just don't get to do it as much. I think that AI class is probably the moment that I can go and like interact with them in that manner. And it's just one short lecture, but I just try to be like, hey, maybe if just a few people here are handling their animals a little bit better, just a bit more mindful of what does it mean for the cows to be stressed and how that impacts their reproductive outcomes, then hey, maybe I did my job, and that makes also the cow's lives a bit better, and we're moving forward in some kind of direction here.
That's something that we deal with a lot in the United States, is that, like, you know, not everybody has access to the research or has access to or uses an extension service to get answers to those questions. But the example you used of like stress affecting pregnancy rates and affecting if a cow gets bred, like that's a real thing that you would think a lot of people would understand. But some people still need that like educational touch point, you know, that you provide to give them that information. So it's like you said, I know that you think it's really important because you're doing it, but I think other people would agree it is really important work.
Absolutely, because I think research, the way we consume it, like we in academia consume it, like I need something, I go find a review and a paper, and today after going through grad school, that's very palatable to me to read, but I don't think it's palatable at all for the average population. It's
right.
It's hard. It's difficult. The tables sometimes don't make sense to people. They might not know what half of those numbers are. So I think just kind of like giving them some ideas of like, okay, when, for example, in that class, I say every time you see cortisol, they're measuring stress. That's all it means.
Yeah.
That's all they're trying to show you.
Yeah.
Because you know? I mean, I don't know. Again, it seems like common sense once you've been working with it and you see it, like we used to run it almost every day in the lab. So it's like, well, who doesn't know that is measuring stress? But people who are not doing that every day, I mean,
they don't know.
They don't. Yeah, they don't know.
So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's a good way to make it, you know, everybody understands it. If you see cortisol, they're talking about stress. That's a really simple way to break it down for sure.
Yeah. So those are the kind of things that, I mean, we have tried to do here in the department, and the things that I try to also seek for in the undergraduate classes. So just trying to get across those students that it's like you might be working with all kinds of people. So sometimes you'll be the person with the highest degree in the room, and sometimes you'll be with the lowest degree in the room. And being able to at least converse with both ends, that I think that's really helpful. So trying to, you know, you don't have to enjoy reading review papers, because I think that's a tall ask, but at least you know how to do it. So if you need, so if there is a producer that needs to understand like what cortisol is, or what is this table trying to tell me, or what, you know, FDN is or whatever, you can at least explain it in a simple way and be able to get them where they need to be. So and I think that's why I really enjoy working with students, because I just feel like that is a very big impact, like through a tiny bunch of little impacts, like they all gonna go do different things out there. And of course not all of them are gonna be working with producers, or even not all of them are going to be in Animal Ag, but I feel that some will, and through them, if we do our job right, then that kind of like, again, the progress moves forward.
I think that's probably one of the most important things, is that the progress keeps moving forward. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to happen super fast, but if you're making progress, that's the important thing. You mentioned students again, and I mean, that's a really important component of your work and the things that you're passionate about. So what advice do you have for any students who are interested in beef production, who might be pursuing a career in that area? And maybe there's not that many students listening, but if there's other academics or something listening to hear and they like your advice, they can take that and share that out. But do you have any advice for students who are pursuing a beef production career?
Yeah, I think the main advice would be to try to get as close of it as possible, like try to actually go do internships and understand, go, you know, do an internship in a feedlot or in a packing plant or in a cow-calf. Try to see as much as you can. If this student happens to be somebody that like, okay, I grew up in a ranch, I'm seeing it all, maybe try to go the other route then. Try to join a lab that's doing ruminal microbiology and try to learn the other end of the spectrum. So I think the larger your spectrum in within that career, the more versatile of a professional they can be. Of course, you can't have always like breadth in depth, like you're gonna have to pick some points to go more in deep, but at least having an idea, like I think, you know, somebody with a PhD in microbiology who works with ruminal bacteria will be much more versatile if they at least understand, you know, USDA grading of carcasses and why that is important, something like that. So just trying to cover as much ground as possible, I think that would be my advice. Don't need to freak out. I mean, we all have limits, but
right,
within those limits, like grab every opportunity to kind of understand more of the industry as you can, so you can be, you know, versatile.
Cast a broad net.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Well, that's wonderful. I think that's great advice for students and also for people who are just learning, going through life as learners, is to be open-minded and not be adverse or not be closed-minded to learning new things or going down different educational avenues just because it's not the exact like perfect fit. You know, I think that we can always be lifelong learners.
Oh, I agree. I 100% agree.
It's time for our famous three.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac's new Bovigen Platinum Vaccines. These four vaccines deliver quality protection against respiratory and reproductive diseases in the vaccine combinations you need to protect cattle at every life stage. Bovigen Platinum vaccines are comprehensive and safe, have consistent supply made in the United States, and are backed by a 6-month guarantee in the Bovigen Platinum Protection Program. Start your platinum protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection or contact your Virbac representative.
Well, we've reached that point in our show when we are at our kind of closing rapid fire questions. And if you are if you've listened to the podcast before, to our audience, you know these questions are asked to every guest. I gave Dr. Brandau heads up on these, so she is not being, you know, these are not out of left field for her. So the first one is, what is your favorite beef or cattle-related resource? It could be a book or a website. It could be a pamphlet. It could even be a person. I say this every episode, but one of my guests said that his favorite resource was his wife, because she did like the production and the genetics and things like that and on the herd, and he did like the data analysis and marketing. So they had a really nice working relationship there. So with that, what is your favorite beef or cattle-related resource?
My favorite resource, beef cattle-related, I would probably maybe have to say I really like Dr. Tedeschi's NRC, his program, which, you know, you can find online. I don't know from the top of my head, because actually I myself don't use it as much, but I recommend to people. I'm like, you wanna, because I've used in the past and I know it works. So actually in talking about husband-wife situation, so my husband actually is very involved with the beef industry. He's a salesman of liquid feed. So he sometimes comes and asks me about like diet formulation and all that. And then one day I said, just download this, watch the tutorial, and then you can use it yourself. So I think that's an amazing resource, and I probably would say that that's the one I think I have went back to a couple times. Yeah. Sure.
Well, that's great. I like that story. Here, you can look it up, learn it on your own. I like that. So, all right, on the flip side, what is your favorite non-beef or cattle-related book, or one that you're currently reading?
One book that I think was really good for me career-wise and that I would recommend to people. Actually, I'm going to say two. One, it's from Good to Great by Jim Collins. I'm not a business person, but I just think that the concepts in that book speak so much to like life in general of, you know, different things. And there's one that I read more recently. I forgot the name of the author, but it's called Thinking in Systems.
Okay.
And I can give you more details on to share the name of the author, but I forgot. I think it's Donna something.
I'm looking it up right now. Thinking in
Systems. Oh, okay. Okay.
Donella Meadows.
Yes.
That's it has a slinky on the front of it.
Yeah, exactly. So that was also really nice book. It's very random. It's not about anything in specific, but just how things work in system manners. And I thought it was really interesting for any, you know, any person in any area. But a lot of it applies to the beef industry because a lot of things happen in systems I could see. So I think it's an interesting read. So yeah, those would be the ones that I would recommend.
Okay, great recommendations. All right, so the last one is, when you think of someone you admire or look up to, what is a characteristic they possess that has led them to be successful?
When I think about those people, I think it's being able to listen, honestly. Being able to listen to people makes them good leaders.
Yeah, I agree. There's a really interesting saying. A former colleague of mine, he told it to me, but it's, there's a big difference between listening to understand someone, you know, truly listening to things they're saying, and listening to be heard. So just listening until it's your turn to talk. And I think that that's a really big difference between those two things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, from the people that I admire, I think that's a common characteristic, that they listen and they understand. And something that I think we could all be a little bit better at, probably. So
yeah, there's probably always room for improvement. Even the best listeners would probably say that.
Yeah.
Well, that is all the questions and time we have for today. Dr. Brandau, I want to thank you so much for joining us. I have really enjoyed this conversation. If listeners have questions for you or want to learn more about our discussion today, is there somewhere they can do that? Is there an online resource or a website we could direct them to? Something like that.
Honestly, not really. I have my LinkedIn page if they want to check that out. And I mean, if I also have my contact information under the faculty directory at Texas A&M University at Mo Science, and if anybody wants to reach out via email or give me a call in my office, I would be happy to interact with them.
Great. Well, you guys, you heard that to our audience. You heard that you can check her out on LinkedIn, and we will put that LinkedIn profile in the show notes so people can look for that. And then we'll also put your, to save a step, I put your email in the show notes as well so people can look that up and contact you if they have any questions. So I just want to thank you again for being here today, and to our audience, thank you for tuning in to the Beef Podcast, and we'll meet you back here next week.
Thank you so much.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.